We get things underway, though, in the second hour by welcoming back to the program one of our favorite guests. He's had a remarkable career as an NFL scout executive, former Patriots general manager. He's, of course, the son of former Commissioner Burt Bell, a pioneer of sports talk radio, the author, along with Ron Borges, of a wonderful book, Present at the Creation. Upton Bell joins us. Hello there, Mr. Bell.
Well, I'm very, very proud today to be on your show, and especially proud because I performed an exorcism on the New York Jets, and we got rid of Wilson. Now, we will see what happens from there, but I will tell you this, Rich, exclusively, since 1946, I've watched 70-plus years of football. Sunday was my number one worst game of 70 years. Absolutely. And I've seen Titanic struggles, 10-10 ties, you name it. All sorts of games that you could say it was different. You know, defenses dominated. But in the era of where the NFL wants to, if they could make defenses, 11-man defenses disappear, and you would be throwing against a ghost defense, they would be happy because that's the way they sell their contracts. They get the bettors, they get the suckers, they get the people say, oh my God, did you see that aerial circus? Boy, does he light them up. When can we get the next Patrick Mahomes? So in light of that, in spite of some of the conditions Sunday, and it was windy at times, I have seen games, the freeze bowl, the ice bowl, Green Bay and Dallas. I can tell you how many games I've seen played in a blizzard. It was still better than what I watched on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I love a good defensive struggle, but this was more just two incredibly inept offenses.
Incompetent. And on the Jets side, they really do have a good defense. I think the Patriots have a good defense. We'll find out more come tomorrow night how good their defense is when they have to face a good receiver and a good running back. And who knows with Kramer, I have no idea. But in this case, you have the Patriots. And we might, by the way, Rich, never know how good Mac Jones is until they get an offensive coordinator in here. And what is interesting to me on that part is Belichick, who is the great defensive mind and certainly a great coach, that at the end of his career, that he would take a chance on two guys just because they're his buddies with a kid that he really needs to develop. We need to find out if Mac Jones is the future. And right now, I would tell you, and I've watched quarterbacks 50, 60, 70 years. Right now, I would tell you, I don't know. I don't know. But I think they know, and I think what they think is he's pretty good if we can put people around him that are good. But they don't have enough good people around him. That offensive line, oh my God, even King Richard the Lionheart, you couldn't win with them.
Upton, how do you see this ending for Bill Belichick? Because it seems like a stretch to think of this team getting back to a Super Bowl in the next few years. Does he stay around long enough to get back there again? Or does Bob Kraft decide at some point in the next year or two that it's time to make a move there like he did at quarterback?
This is a great conundrum. Because if you're in Kraft's position, if he's not doing that well, do you want to be the person? And by the way, I think the record's phony in that, yes, he's going to, if he wins another 16 or 20 games, he's going to surpass Don Shula. But the reason I say that, and good for Belichick, by the way, I say that is when those records were set, and Shula's in particular, who I'm very, very familiar with, They were a 14-game schedule.
Right.
Only a couple of teams made the playoff. You really had to be good. Now everybody makes the playoffs. Seven teams. I haven't seen probably five good teams I've seen this year. That's about it. So back to this question. Now you're sitting here in your craft, and you say, well, I think it's time for Bill to go. But do I want to be remembered as the owner who fired him 5 or 10 games short of that all-time record? That's where Belichick kind of has him, if there's any thought of it. Because I can tell you this, if they end up with a losing record this year, look at the normal owner in the NFL, if there's any normal owner. And what do you say? I gave you 3 years. How many coaches get 3 years and they're out?
I want to ask you about the competitiveness, Upton, because it seems that these days what the NFL wants is what they like to call parity, the idea that if you're out of contention, you're not out for very long, that every couple of years any team can have a shot to rise. Now, your dad created the NFL draft with the idea of making things more competitive. But there's a big difference between the NFL then, when there were still dominant teams, and today, when it's hard to find even many very good teams.
Well, his immortal words on any given Sunday is still true today.
Mm.
And he said it when it was a 14-team league. 6 on in each conference. You really had to be good. So there were upsets, and he saw it. What happened is that the league is now 32 teams. And I know, you know, hockey and basketball, I mean, they're all the same. But football is such a unique sport. Rich, you do the games for Maine, right?
Right.
So football is the most unique of all sports. There's brutality in it. There is a great mental struggle between the offense and the defense. It's a game unlike baseball, basketball, hockey, where if one person misses his block or one person misses his tackle, if the quarterback overthrows somebody, that's it. And that's what makes it, in spite of all the things that have happened, the best sport to really watch in many ways. What happened to it is that it's very rare. When you have 32 teams, let me tell you what's harder to find than a quarterback. An offensive lineman.
Mm.
My God, I'm telling you, it looked like Milton Academy was out there for the Pictures offensive line on Sunday. But you can't find them. They're harder than quarterbacks to find. So think about it. You know, every week you go on, you hear on ESPN, you hear on all of these different shows. They're pretty good, but their offensive line needs some help there. And basically, if two guys miss a block, the quarterback's going to get killed. The runner is going to get nowhere. The play is going to get nowhere. All you need is one or two. Think about it if you have three or four. And you tell me how many teams you really think in the NFL out of the 32 teams really have a good offensive line?
One of the things up
four, about four.
One of the things I think a point you make too is that there could be 32 teams in hockey, then there are 26 guys on the active roster. That's only half the number on a football team, which means that it's probably harder to find enough quality football players than it is to find quality players in any other sport.
Correct. Go to the head of the class. Correct. Now, they don't want to hear this. Whether it's me or somebody else, they don't want to hear this because they are selling a product now that they found every sucker under the sun. And I understand. I mean, you guys get Amazon on Thursday to watch the crucifixion?
Oh, yes. Oh, those are brutal games.
Oh, my God. Not only bad, it takes you 45 minutes to get onto it. I mean, I pay for it, and I get on it. They're selling me all these crappy movies and products and everything else. I said, please. I scream into the phone. I click it. Get me the game. And then you got to see Al Michaels, who I think is somewhat slipped. And Kirk Herbstreit really should not be doing those games. And yet, the product is terrible. But when you have Amazon giving you $1 billion over 10 years, they just are happy to be part of the action. Everybody wants part of the action. So the way you keep the networks happy is, I mean, the three games on the ball. One I will watch because it's the Patriots. The other two, I can take a nap. You know, but they sold it to the network. And listen, good for them. If they can find people paying billions of dollars, the networks are saying to themselves, listen, where else can I get a product, even if it's really bad, that everybody wants to see? Now, added in that helps it is the gambling aspect. My father must be turning over in his grave right now. But the NFL, they right behind the Supreme Court, they said to themselves, okay, if everybody else is going to make money, we're going to do it. All I can tell you is this, Rich. Just one guy, just one dumb lineman or somebody else that sent somebody else in to make a bet for him, and they find out, like that guy in Atlanta that walked right into the gambling joint in front of everybody and placed a bet. This is fabulous. I mean, this is what you've got. And again, I'm not here to be totally negative about the game. I'm just trying to point out some of the problems that they really have. And as you guys point out, I mean, they used to be called the taxi squad, by the way.
Yeah.
Now it's the practice squad. The taxi squad was founded because Paul Brown, who I still consider the greatest coach in the history of the game, changed everything. Paul Brown, the Browns at the time, were owned by Arthur McBride, who owned the taxi company in Cleveland. So Brown was the guy that named it the taxi squad, and he would hide players. He would do everything with it. Now today it's the practice squad. There are more guys on the practice squad than there is on the regular squad. And you can trade them from one squad to another. And I'm saying, who on that practice squad, except somebody who might be injured, who on that practice squad is worth a damn? Have you ever seen anybody really come off unless you've picked up somebody really good at the first cut on waivers?
Oh, it's pretty rare.
Have you seen anybody come on?
Huh? Pretty rare, absolutely. We're talking with Upton Bell on Downtown. Speaking of the Thanksgiving game, Upton, I was trying to remember, wasn't your father involved? This was, I think, before he was commissioner, back when he was an owner, in kind of preserving the idea of a Thanksgiving game, because for a while there, I think the only teams that played on Thanksgiving in the early 40s were the Eagles and the Steelers.
Well, they are, and it's interesting. His footprints are all over still football today, because after he became commissioner, that first of all, he saw, you know, I had the opening of the Upton Bell Collection at UMass Amherst, and I recommend anybody that's up there that wants to see it, or they can go online and see it. In fact, by the way, last year when you did do the main game against UMass Amherst, but they had to cancel the opening, but
right.
We had it this year. I had them invite the son of the father who played for my father on the Philadelphia Eagles versus the Brooklyn Dodgers. Yes, there was a football team. In 36, 37, it was the first televised game in history, and Bert Bell owned the Eagles at that time, and they had it televised into the World's Fair. And he saw what television could do for football. And the minute he became commissioner, he turned around 2 years later and sold the first national TV game, which was the Eagles in a blinding snowstorm being the Cardinals, who was champions from the year before, the Dumont Network carried it. And then he moved on to the Thanksgiving Day game, although I will tell you this, the first Thanksgiving game day in history was in 1920 when the Canton Bulldogs played and lost 7-0.
Wow.
1925, Red Grange on the Bummer Munt tour, once he had signed with Cash and Carey Paolo with the Chicago Bears, he basically, made Thanksgiving a big thing. And then it went on and on until finally he wanted the Lions and the Packers to play every year. And I can tell you this, it's too bad people can't go back and see some of the greatest slugfests I've ever seen on Thanksgiving Day. My father wanted it, promoted it, sold it, because he saw, unlike today, it was the only game, pro game on television. He could get the attention of the national audience on that one day a year, Thanksgiving Day.
Right.
Some of the most classic games, 1962. Green Bay Packers, on their way to an unbeaten season, play the Detroit Lions with Alex Karras, Roger Brown, some of the greatest players in history for the Lions, all Hall of Famers. The Packers were heavy favorites. The Lions beat them 27-14, and it was a record at the time. Bart Starr was sacked 14 times. Think about that. The world champion Packers. It was like a bloodbath. And you could hear people all over America must be screaming unbelief in watching this game. And, of course, that's the only game the Packers lost the whole year. Mm. The Lions lost one more. And Don Shula, I'm sure, wherever he is today, thanking them, because guess who was the architect of that great Lions defense that day? Don Shula.
Right, that's right. I want to get away from football to get your thoughts on a couple of recent things that have occurred here in the New England sports scene. The first one, and I think it's still, we're still trying to figure out what's going to happen. The Bruins have brought in a law firm, but this whole debacle involving Mitchell Miller and then trying to get rid of that contract, it just seems like such a bad decision by Bruins management to associate with this guy. Did they drop the puck, as it were, on this one?
One of the dumbest moves I've seen. Now, let me just say this. Either Neely or Sweeney, Cam Neely or Don Sweeney, should be fired. They won't be. And this is all a cover-up. Because, listen, I've been involved as a general manager and owner of teams, and I can tell you this. They know who was the person that gave the final okay. And I'll tell you who the persons were. Jolly Jacobs, Don Sweeney, and Cam Neely. They all were in on it. Why? I don't know, because I've talked to a lot of hockey people, including Nate Greenberg, who used to be part of the Bruins. This guy wasn't some great drop-dead prospect. He wasn't somebody that you would say, oh, we got to have him, so let's hide all the problems that he had in the past. This guy was a decent prospect. That was it. And you ask yourself, why would they do something like that? People are still scratching their head and saying, why take a chance on something like this? Why ruin your reputation? Why, with a guy that has a horrible record, and bring him in here? And you saw what happened. The Bruins players were asked, and they didn't like it. They didn't want a guy like that in their organization. Now they cover it up with Loretta Lynch. Oh, please. How many more investigations now that she's been out of the Attorney General's office? Everybody who sneezes needs to have her come in and investigate it. I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke.
And another situation I know you weren't impressed with was Jaylen Brown and his initial response to the Kyrie Irving situation and his support, at least initially, for Irving, despite his clear anti-Semitism.
He has been, if you talk to people in basketball, he has been a problem everywhere he's been. You couldn't get a nicer guy than Wick Grousbeck here, and he's been very, very careful about it. But this guy poisoned this team here. He's poisoning the Nets, and I don't care what he says now. Believe me, the anti-Semitic signs of him are just unbelievable. Now, the hard thing to believe is Jaylen Brown is really defending him. Mm. I mean, they had the whole scene the other day after all settled, he's coming back, and this group of African Americans who have been portrayed as anti-Semitic, they're outside of the Barclays Center, and they're outside, you know, walking up and down and screaming and yelling, and yet, what's Jaylen Brown do? But he goes on and he tweets out about them and about Kyrie, and then he tries to claim that he didn't understand that they were a hate group too. Please, that guy's a very, very smart guy. And I've never totally understood why he and, for a while, those other people on the Celtics did the same thing too. Yeah, they didn't talk about it, but occasionally they would defend this guy. And I'm saying to myself, this guy poisoned every team he's been with. He's still poisoning the Nets. He came back last night. And yet you've got guys like Jaylen Brown defending him. I've heard some fans have said, we like him as a player. What the hell is going on here? And it's head scratching why a guy would do that. But you know, even Jason Tatum. Remember 2 years ago when they were blowing the Nets out.
Right.
And at the end of the game, you know, people are booing at the Garden, and Jason Tatum is trying to quiet them down and the hugging and kissing afterwards. That's another thing. I could do a whole show, by the way, on what has happened to us. What has happened? Just the handshake, or not even that. You walk up. Now you beat up each other, and then you kiss each other. I don't get it.
Upton Bell is with us here on Downtown. Now, you touched on this incredible collection that is now being housed at the University of Massachusetts, the Upton Bell Collection, and there's just so much to it. You sent me the links that people can view online by going to the UMass website, but not just football, not just sports, but history, including a wonderful collection of some of the great interviews that you've conducted through the years. And you, my gosh, you've talked to everybody, and it goes far beyond the world of sports.
Well, now, none of that. Your interviews are going to be included in it. In fact, in the end, what they're doing is I go up there once every couple of months and spend 2 hours being interviewed. Long after I'm gone, there'll be a whole separate link for all of the audio and video and interviews like you and I have done with you guys. And what they're doing now is they're having me lay down, starting in 1850, believe it or not, the history of college and pro sports, my family, but all of the other people that I knew and was involved with all the way to today. So we're looking at over 100 years that people will be able, historians who are already going on and looking at this, will be able to check in and say, well, what happened in 1946? What happened when Burt Bell made sure that the Rams went to L.A. and then they broke the color line with Woody Strode and Jackie Robinson's great teammate, Woody Strode, and Kenny Washington? And all of the historical part of it, including there are letters on there. Now, my grandmother, her father, was one of the closest friends with Abraham Lincoln. We have the letter. And thanks to who you have interviewed a couple of times, the great historian Sidney Blumenthal, who's doing five or six volumes on Abraham Lincoln, I was telling him, I said, because in my father's book, they were talking about, you know, that his grandmother, my grandmother, my grandfather's mother, her father was a good friend of Abraham Lincoln. And I told Sydney about it. Sydney went and looked in the National Archives and sent me copies of letters between Abraham Lincoln and my grandmother's father.
Wow.
So that's on there. All sorts of other things are on there. Documents, baseball bats signed by the Yankees in 1946, Jolton Joe DiMaggio, Yogi Berra, the Red Sox, Ted Williams, all of these different artifacts on there. It's such a huge collection, but the other things are the papers, the letters, and all of the other things that will add to it, and the interviews. The interviews are probably, I would say, there are probably going to be at least 200 interviews on at the end.
Well, it's a remarkable collection. I can't wait to get down there and see it in person at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, the Upton Bell Collection in the Huddle of Football History. Upton, it is always a treat for us to talk with you, my friend. Thanks, as always, for making a little time for us this afternoon.
Hey, listen, thank you, guys. And just remember, keep those turkeys gobbling.
We will do that. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Upton. Be well.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, Upton.
Appreciate it.
Upton Bell with us here on Downtown, 29 minutes after 5 o'clock. Always a treat to talk with the great Upton Bell.